Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Davis Maddock, joined by Patrick Corain, and we thought that we would take a look back at the season that was, see some of the things we got right, see some of the things we got wrong, see if there's anything to learn. Probably the number one thing I learned is just pick the best plays, because that was a great strategy this year. If you just avoided all the big injuries, and you pick Cooper Kupp instead of Robert Woods, you pick Debo instead of Brandon Ayuk, you take Deontay Johnson instead of Chase Claypool, you just got rich.
Yeah, it is funny, because with fantasy football, there's like these two lessons that are kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum, where you do want to be diversifying, but then you see these what feel like coin flips at the time. Last night on Chip Chase, and we rewatched our NFC draft, and we were debating JT and Barkley. Felt like a coin flip. And at the time, yep, Pete and I were like, yeah, we lean JT. Gretchen Leone leaned Barkley. Leone broke the tie to JT. We were like, all right, we all like JT. That's cool. Kyle, yep, doesn't matter that much. Mattered a ton. So it's like, it's difficult to diversify when, the Ayuk Debo thing, getting that right would have like won you the season. The Cup Woods, if you were right about that, but at the same time, there were so many injuries this year. It felt like one of the most chaotic years ever, even more chaotic than last year.
Way more chaotic, so, because there were actually way more guys who missed time with COVID this year than last year.
Right. So if you were the type of person who was like all in on a few key spots, this was like the worst year to do that. So I don't know.
Unless you were on the right spots,
unless you just hit the nuts. Yeah.
Which you could have done. I mean, look, I know the Tampa Bay Buccaneers backfield is the nut spot, but I think Rojo sucks. And I think Lenny's good, rich. I think Cooper Kupp is really good. And I'm in on Matt Stafford, rich. I think Saquon Barkley is totally dust, rich.
Right. Although he's not totally dust, in my opinion. He's just playing winning Jake from Michael in an offense.
Are you not worried that that Devontae Booker looks better than him?
Yeah, the combination of coaching, quarterback play, and him in a platoon is not ideal. But he's still, I don't know, he's still made some nice breakaway runs. When you see Barkley play as well, he doesn't always look that great, but I've seen him look like vintage Barkley enough this season where I think he's like pretty solid talent wise. I think the issue with him is that he needs to be like 110% of what he was at his peak to break through the situation. And he's probably like 90% of it.
I mean, he's always had the Barry Sanders disease, where a huge number of his runs are not successful runs because he's always trying to break 60-yard touchdowns, and that doesn't work when the passing offense can't make, like, if you're immediately putting your team in second and 12, and your quarterback can't ever convert second and 12s, then it's just not going to work out, which is what we saw happen with him.
Yeah, exactly.
So structurally speaking, another thing that I think is going to be a big change next year is the elite tight ends. Kittle had the two big games. Kelsey had, I think, only two 100-yard games all season long, I believe. And he had the one crazy game with like 180 and two. Waller was persona non grata. I mean, Darren Waller had one good game this season, and it was in week one against the Ravens. Even, and he did get hurt, but even before he had gotten hurt, he was not playing well. TJ Hawkinson, I mean, like, I don't even know where TJ Hawkinson finished in terms of tight end points per game, but I guarantee you it's very similar to what he did last year, which is maybe he was good points per game, but did that via accumulation and not via spike weeks. Like, I feel like Mark Andrews is going to be really, really pushed up in drafts next year. But I feel like by and large, I mean, probably the move at tight end was either surviving long enough for Andrews to turn up, or waiver wire, basically.
Although Kelsey, I mean, Kelsey was quite helpful. We had him in the NFC league that we won. You know, I think
he was going, FFP, he was going ahead of Tyreek, who was better, right?
We got him at the 112 in non-tight end premium there, PPR. But in the FFPC, I still think he was a pretty solid pick as well, you know, compared to the other guys in the like early first. So I don't know. I don't think Kelsey was necessarily a bad pick. In some ways, he was one of the better picks you could have made. But at the same time, I am worried about him next year. His ADOT's fallen way off. Hill's ADOT has also fallen way off. So you just don't have the same explosion in general in the Kansas City offense this year, which has been, you know, discussed to death. But you also have age with Kelsey, which makes me worried about his declining ADOT, which has fallen off a lot. You know, he used to be at like 9.5. I think he was at like 8.9 last year. He's down to 7.5 this year, which when you start to get in that range, like, you're really just banking on a bunch of targets and you're kind of like slowly becoming Jason Witten. So which works.
I mean, Pat, the pick of the year was Zach Ertz at tight end. I mean, you like Zach Ertz, what is Zach Ertz? Like the tight end 8 in PPR?
Probably. Yeah.
Let's look that up. 2021 tight end fantasy scoring. I mean, Zach Ertz Gerald, just, I mean, absolutely smoked the position. He was healthy. Dude, in PPR, Zach Ertz is the tight end 6. He scored 5 fewer points than Kyle Pitts.
That's amazing. Oh man, I love it. I rewatched the NFC draft that we did because we on Chip Jason last night, we were discussing it, and so I flagged some moments to rewatch. But one of the moments, we didn't bring this up last night, but Pete was at one point just absolutely tilting your tweet from you're like, you're kind of like flag plants entering the season, and then you had led it with Zach Ertz
top 10.
He just couldn't believe that you'd done that,
which is funny, because I think a lot of my other takes were not very good. I mean, this was my least successful year in best ball, least successful year in the FFPC since I started taking them super seriously. Partly because some of my most drafted players at every position were terrible.
I had the same issues.
The rookie quarterbacks, all bad. Lawrence, bad. Fields, bad. Lance started twice. One of those starts came when all my teams were eliminated. Tua was fine. He was my third most drafted quarterback, I think. And I guess that worked out because he got Waddle, but, you know, Ronald Jones, useless. Mecole Hardman, useless. Donovan Peoples-Jones had one spike week, but he was mostly useless. Really, the only two guys I hammered who worked out were Daryl Henderson and Zach Ertz.
Yeah, Zach Ertz was one for me. I was hammering. Luckily, I got on Chase a bunch late in the draft.
Yeah, well, because he was slipping.
I was on Debo because, I mean, I got bailed out on Debo because he was so cheap compared to Ayuk. Like, if he had gone even, like, 2 picks behind Ayuk, I wouldn't have been on him, I don't think.
Sure.
But, you know, you're getting, like, a round and a half later or whatever. So I was scooping him up a lot. But I wasn't really on Cup. Like, I wasn't not taking Cup, but I wasn't prioritizing him. I was prioritizing DJ Moore in that range. And so I had less Cup than I should have had. So yeah, a lot of the guys I was making stands on, you know, similarly. I mean, the rookie quarterback one, I really am kicking myself for.
We got so exuberant, dude. We got so
way
exuberant.
Too exuberant. I also, in Dynasty, in Superflex, I've made it like I've had a lot of success just banking on us not knowing which quarterbacks are going to be good. And just like in the, usually in Superflex, that means scooping up whoever everyone else leaves for dead. Yeah. So, you know, Herbert, Josh Allen, you could even get like Daniel Jones was free and then, you know, quite profitable to trade off later. So, you know, the flip side of that coin, obviously, is this quarterback class that's so heralded might be terrible, which it, I mean, it's a terrible.
It doesn't look good.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. Like no one, like Davis Mills is second in efficiency on the year behind Mac Jones. It's not exactly
what we were hoping for. No, which is sort of interesting because we're going to have a chance to do this again. I've been looking forward a little bit, and I think we are going to see massive quarterback musical chairs this offseason, especially if a couple of these guys get traded. But just off the top of my head, the Dolphins might have a new quarterback. The Colts might have a new quarterback, depending on how the playoffs go. Like, I know they like Wentz, but if they flame out round one of the playoffs, or if they lose this game to the Jaguars, you know, something could happen there. The Broncos are probably going to have a new quarterback. The Browns are going to have a new quarterback. The Steelers are going to have a new quarterback. The Washington football team probably has a new quarterback. We'll see what the Giants do. The Panthers will have a new quarterback. Matt Ryan could retire. No, I've not seen anyone float that out, but Calvin Ridley's probably going to be on a different team. So it'll be Matt Ryan returning to Kyle Pitts and Russell Gage and probably having the same season that they just had. The Vikings, you know, it seems like they're about done with the Kirk Cousins experiment. And
he's under contract.
They want to trade him. Have you heard this rumor that the Baker Mayfield for Kirk Cousins swap?
Oh my God. That would be incredible.
Isn't that amazing? It's just like two teams being like, we're sick of this guy. And then the other team like, yeah, we're sick of this guy too.
I mean, Kirk Cousins is a way better quarterback than Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think we've ever really seen anything from Baker that would make you like Cousins is capped. He's definitely got a capped ceiling, but.
Whoa, Baker has been really good before. It's just been really short flashes. He turns the ball over a lot, which is a problem.
He like flashed. Everyone's very excited after his rookie year, but he hasn't really done anything since. And even then it was more like, hey, this rookie is doing good stuff for a rookie. Right. Like when did he actually like genuinely flat? Like he's never had a stretch. Like, I mean, I was like, even Herbert, like he's never had, you know, he's just never even been close to that.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But I mean, I mean, I guess one of the things we did learn was that there is a lot of value in the Kirk Cousins, the certainly like the Matt Staffords, the Tom Brady's, just like the slow and steady, you know, 18, 19, 20 points a week. Also wondering, I mean, this was a problem a bunch of my teams had, which was weeks with no quarterback scoring, yeah. Right?
What's helpful? When the quarterback is starting
plays, yeah, when the quarterback plays. Yeah.
Yeah, that's generally good.
Yeah, no, it is generally good. I think that is a big thing that I learned. I'm going to be much less optimistic, I think, about Corral, you know, and all these guys.
Well, yeah, and I also think like you obviously need to have a lot of upside on your best ball teams and everything, but like how much upside are you adding versus like taking on additional risk that might not be necessary? And what if you already, like, you're supposed to draft like you're right. Right. So like if you already crushed your early round skill position picks, why are you taking on massive risk at the quarterback position where you generally aren't going to separate a ton? We're not very good at predicting who's going to separate a ton anyway. And like there's generally like some cheap options. Like Hurts was very cheap. Burrow was very cheap.
Yeah, Burrow. Not being in on Burrow, like retroactively, just feels like Burrow. Like not having like 17% Joe Burrow just feels like it's such a disaster.
I think I did, but he's paired with like Lawrence, Lance, Fields.
I mean,
like,
that's every
all of those guys.
Every team I would pull up that it would advance and be like, great, this team has Trey Lance, this team has Zach Wilson, like, this team is
Darnold,
just a nightmare. Yeah,
Patrick.
So much loser Darnold.
And on two quarterback teams as well. And I was talking to Pete about this. I think he's not on the same page with this idea. Maybe it's like hindsight bias, but I don't know, man. Like, if I'm doing my first quarterback in the 10th or 11th round, I think I'm just taking three. And I know I'm like,
yeah,
I know I'm taking some upside off the table. And I know, like, maybe in the playoffs, that's not going to be that helpful, but I don't know. Like, the way these playoff rounds work is if you get a guy to, like, if you had Burrow and you got a guy to bridge you through that 1 week, then you get Burrow to blow up for the last 2 weeks. Like, it just comes down. I don't know. Like, I don't think you're giving up that much upside if you take that third quarterback in the 18th round. And I just looked at way too many teams that were dead because I had, like, you know, Burrow and Darnold, and that wasn't enough.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, one thing, and this is like the big war is, you know, is it best to have teams with the absolute, you know, best possible upside or whatever, or is it just best to try and get as many teams through as possible? And it does kind of look like, I mean, I think where I'm at now is maybe it's best to just try and get as many teams through as possible. Now, maybe that will be different next year because this specific playoffs, you know, the COVID stuff really started blowing up right when the DraftKings and Underdog best ball playoffs started coming up. So just so many teams were taking zeros, and maybe that will be different next year.
Yeah. And I think, like, obviously you still need to be stacking. You still need to, like, be building teams that, like, are very live that you're getting through. But I think on, like, team, you know, monster teams versus team get them through, I'm over on team get them through at this point.
I think I am too. And you know, one of the ways that you get the monster teams is by really, really hammering late round picks, right? Just being like, I'm taking Cordarrelle Patterson on every team or whatever, which, you know, obviously had you done that this year, your advance rates would have been phenomenal, but it's just so hard to do that. Like, some of the guys I was hammering there, like Peoples Jones, like Pringle, you know, they contributed like what, Pringle scored 3 touchdowns on the year. And one of them was during the playoffs when all my teams were dead anyways. Like, I mean, obviously you want to do it. It's just very hard to do well.
Even if you do it, like, fairly well, like Pringle was, like, a good one. Justin Jackson was a guy, you know, like, if you had, you know, especially for the playoff stuff. But it's not like Justin Jackson was a guy you're dropping in managed leagues throughout the year. Like, you really, there's, like, it's just a very, very, you know, thin bet, really, to be able to nail that guy. I mean, obviously we're going to get hyped about guys, and I like my strategy of, I think I'll go back to the, you know, fall in love with a different 18th round pick every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. And just keep mixing it up. That's fun. But I guess, you know, sacrificing one of those for a third quarterback when you don't have an elite quarterback, I think is, I just feel like better about that, even in these tournaments, just because, you know, that third quarterback could help you get through. I think we were talking about, I think this was Dricko's team that won the FFPC 100K. I don't know. It's all blended together. I think it was, but he had Roethlisberger. No, it was Leone's team. Leone's team got through to the final 12 of that FFPC team because he had Roethlisberger, who was an auto pick. But he got him through the first round or the second round of that tournament. So, you know, I'm like, I guess I'm just, like, more open to the idea that that type of build, which, you know, three quarterback builds has a good advance rate when you don't, you know, one of them's not elite. That type of build might also have upside in these single elimination rounds where you're just trying to get someone in the quarterback slot with, you know, sufficient points.
Which, and I mean, obviously it is easy to overreact based on what we just saw. I mean, there was just so much, like, I would be, I think, a little surprised if next year's NFL season ends up as chaotic as this season in terms of, I mean, maybe the injuries will be bad. The injuries were insane this year, but the combination of loads of injuries to players drafted in the first five rounds and the COVID list stuff made it just like an absolute minefield of a situation.
Yeah. And I think that's the diversification point. And like, you know, Pete Overzet,
but diversifying, okay, diversifying is bad for the monster teams argument. You don't really want to be diversifying as much if you're trying to do the monster teams, right?
I guess so. But I think you can still be diversified and then, you know, we just be like kind of pushing it with your structure.
And well, because like, for example, if you diversified Cup and Woods, that way hurt your diversification chances versus if you just took Cup every time.
Right. Yeah. And I guess it just comes down, like, part of the diversification thing is like, how bad of a season are you willing to have? Because there's a guy who took Woods there. You know what I mean? Like, it takes it out of, like, oh, you just take Cup. But like, there's, you know, if you do that, you'll take Woods 1 year. And, you know, that's going to be like a really rough year for you, like mentally, not just financially. So, you know, that's part of the, but Pete was a lot better with the diversification. I was looking at, you know, he posted his exposures right before the season and everything. I was like, man, you were much, much better about being diversified. And Pete had a sweat for the million. So I think diversification is one of the lessons for me, especially in best ball where, you know, some of these picks that you don't love so much and manage, if they have like a really nice 4 or 5 week stretch, like that can really help you. Where in managed, maybe, you know, you're not even starting those guys half the time and it doesn't help you as much.
Yeah. And I mean, look, we learn this lesson every single year. You fall in love with these guys and manage and you end up dropping like more than half the guys you draft. And exactly. Managed is so much more about just hitting like three home runs. Like if you just get three dudes who are like, at, like if you drafted Cooper Kupp and Jalen Hurts and, you know, what, Mark Andrews, whatever, doesn't matter. And those dudes just smash for you every single week. It just literally didn't matter. Like you can chop and change around those guys so easily and managed.
Exactly. Yeah. You just have to hit on a couple of guys. To that point, I was looking at a draft that we did in January, me, Gretch and Pete. And it was like, it was pretty wild. I mean, first of all, I think we got Kyle Pitts in the eighth round of this FFPC best ball draft at the time. So, wow. You know, just some silly stuff like that, you know, like last January pre-draft. So, you know, you see lots of stuff, but we took Swift in the second round and we took Gibson in the third round. And I was just like, you know, just the hype machine, which I was a part of, by the way, but the hype machine stuff, it does make you like, I just want to do a better job of kind of setting priors entering the summer hype where you're like Swift, I, you know, did and still do think is more talented than Gibson, but
yeah.
But the projection stuff, you know, is going to push that to Gibson. And then you start to dream about the receiving ability. But I think a lot of that ends up kind of just being double counting because the projections are kind of like, it's okay to have Gibson ahead if the projections are on that. But, you know, I think a lot of that hype was us kind of like reapplying some of the same stuff that was going to be baked into the projections and kind of discounting the talent difference, which, you know, like as evidenced by my own pick in January, I thought Swift was better. So I actually had plenty of Swift, but just like that's an example of, you know, one of those things where I feel like there were spots where I kind of lost sight of like the talent evaluation that I had on some of these guys in some cases, and then like lost sight in both directions, like in some cases, like not accounting for it enough. And in other cases, like being more hyped on a guy than I really should have been given the talent profile.
Were there any dead zone running backs that made you question your commitment to not drafting running backs in the dead zone?
The one guy was Josh Jacobs, and
yeah, because and he fell so far. I mean, he fell in those underdog drafts that were just insane. I mean, you could get him in like the eighth round sometimes.
I was taking him there, even in the seventh. I had a guy on Twitter talk me into him basically, and I mean, ultimately, like the thing with Jacobs is he was a first round pick. You know, the team was like not gonna not play him. And he hadn't been very good, but he did have a path to receiving, even though you know, he's not like an amazing receiver, but he's capable. And, you know, the guy, you know, ultimately injuries kind of opened that up for him. Gruden leaves. Gruden was using him wrong. So they start using him a little bit more intelligently. And, you know, he's a very solid pick. Like, he's probably going to be the, you know who this guy is now, Davis?
Who?
You know who?
No. Yes, we can't. I mean, I'm not going to take him. Someone else can take him. I'm not doing this with Clyde Edwards-Helaire again. I won't do it.
He's going to be in like the sixth round. You're not taking him?
Oh, he's going later than that, bud. Clyde, because they'll draft a guy. They'll either draft a guy or Derek Gore is going to like score a touchdown in the AFC Conference Championship.
Derek Gore is like really good. That is a legitimate concern.
Yeah. And he's going to be in like a three-way timeshare with the mentor and Derek Gore. And it's just not going to happen for him.
Yeah.
I'll probably still
take some of them in the seventh and eighth round.
My dynasty bags as it pertains to Clyde Edwards-Helaire are so heavy. It's basically the heaviest bags that I own. I mean, it's unbelievable.
There's some trade offers that were rejected that I'm glad you rejected for where you would have been sending me Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish that I would have done those because it's pretty painful to stare at him on these dynasty. I mean, just knowing I have multiple dynasty teams out there with Henry Ruggs and Clyde Edwards-Helaire on them. And, yeah. You know who the biggest poison pill ever was? I had all these tanking teams in Dynasty last offseason in these super flex leagues, and I have so much Trevor Lawrence at the 101, and it's just the ultimate poison pill. It's just like he's useless.
In a year with Jamar Chase and Kyle Pitts.
And Jalen Waddle.
And Jalen Waddle, yeah. Looks great. Looks great.
You know who who's gonna be the guy who makes us look stupid next year? That we're not going to take is going to be Najee Harris. We're not going to take Najee at all. And he's going to have a Derrick Henry season if they get a quarterback.
Where does he go, you think?
Where Jonathan Taylor was going this offseason? Like 10, 11, 12, 13, 14.
I think I can get on board a little bit there. Like if he's going to fall to like the 202, I think I can scoop him up a little bit just to get exposure. I was worried you were going to say like 105.
I mean, I haven't even sat down to start thinking about it. And it's going to be really heavily dependent on who they get as quarterback. If Mason Rudolph or Dwayne Haskins, if that's their plan at quarterback, then yeah, I mean, it's just not going to. No one's going to want to take him, but if they draft Kenny Pickett or something, way more people are going to be into it.
Yeah. The thing with Harris is that like, this was kind of his like ideal outcome and he still was not, I mean, well, he's he come off to, a really big game, but he still didn't have like an incredible season.
He needs to score like 14 touchdowns to get there. And he didn't. Which is, you know, it is what it is, but it didn't work for them.
No, and he's also, his yards per route run right now is like under one.
Yeah, he just catches stone cold dump offs.
Yeah. So it's not like he's this, I mean, he doesn't have any breakaway ability. I don't know. You just, Derrick Henry, I don't think is the comp because Derrick Henry's a breakaway legend. You know, it's like, I'm not even sure who the comp is.
Yeah, I mean it's like Eddie Le'Veon Lacy's Bell. It's like Le'Veon Bell without the touchdowns.
Yeah, but Le'Veon Bell's was a way better receiver.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's honestly like it's Eddie Lacy with a bigger workload and worse quarterback play.
There are going to be so many running backs who go in the first round next year, and then it's just going to be done. Like it would not surprise me if like one running back goes on average in the second round, and it's just all wide receivers.
Well, the class isn't very good, right? This running back class. I was looking at, I mean, I think there's a couple like two down guys who look okay. There's like a couple, there's like one guy who's got a pretty decent receiving profile, but I don't think he's like very highly regarded. He could be kind of a Kenny Gainwell type really. So I don't think there's like a ton of like fresh new legs coming in, you know?
No, there's not. I don't think. Yeah.
So that's going to make it tough.
Where does Cooper Kupp go?
Probably like 103, 104.
You think he goes ahead of Davante Adams?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess when I sit down to do projections next year that Adams projects better than Kupp.
Well, I mean, like if we were drafting today, you have to take Kupp first because we don't know what Aaron Rodgers' deal is.
He's coming back. They got the bye again, and he's going to win MVP. I don't think you leave that. I don't think you leave to go be coached by Dan Quinn in Denver if that happens.
I'm not putting anything past Aaron Rodgers after this year and a half. You know, he's
no. That's fair. You know, I mean, like some of the things that we theorized coming in were proven correct, right? Like the Mike Davis, you know, Melvin Gordon, like avoid those guys. But
I'm still mad we weren't more. Like that was the easiest thing to get on. Like we just because the guy had wide receiver by his name, I wasn't drafting him. I'm so mad at myself for that, for not taking Patterson. Because we were so all over Mike Davis.
We took Quadre Olsen a couple times and we couldn't start taking Patterson.
Running back by his name. Yeah, it's so stupid. Like such, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing of like, I had no interest in Olsen other than that he was a running back. They label a running back wide receiver and I don't draft him.
It does feel like one of the, does feel like one of the all time, like you let that slip through your hands type things. Cause 100%. I even love Cordarrelle Patterson. Like I'm even biased for Cordarrelle Patterson. Yeah.
And he's been great with the ball in his hands. He's like, I wrote an article with my brother back in like 2016 that was like, this guy's going to stick in the league. Cause he's an all time kick returner. Like keep your eye on him. And then when the time came around, I was like, no, not interested.
No, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah. So no, it is. It is. It's incredibly painful. And then this is another situation we'll have people chasing again, which is they don't have anyone to throw the ball to. So, which led to Breshad Perriman getting drafted a bunch. And we'll have a couple teams like this next year. And I think one of the things I'm going to try to do is just draft the young players there. So like, obviously Perriman ended up being terrible. If you would have just taken a couple stabs on St. Brown, you would have gotten a bunch of spike weeks. Like there were people out there with like 20% Breshad Perriman and they could have been taking St. Brown instead.
Yeah. I think that's a good, you know, there was no path to it on the Jaguars. Everyone bombed there. I guess unless you're somehow knew Dan Arnold was going to get traded there, but the Jets, Elijah Moore was the guy. So yeah, I think taking the young
and
guys
even he
offenses,
didn't have that many spike weeks.
That's true. Although he's one of those where like I feel, you know, the results weren't there, but I feel pretty strongly that he was a good pick.
He was a good pick. Yeah.
I mean, he got steamed, so maybe he wasn't a great pick in the ninth round or whatever. But you know, at one point in the draft season, he was a great pick. But I to the point of bad teams. I also want to go through before the summer and just like list the teams that I think could just like absolutely crater teams where we don't want really
anybody
any part of,
or we don't want anybody
where we don't want anybody. And, or like maybe we want someone, but they have to have supreme talent like DeAndre Swift. Like DeAndre Swift can clearly break through pretty much any situation because he's like a very, very talented young receiving back. But you know, outside of stuff like that, Michael Carter, by the way, I've been impressed with how bad that situation is, and he's flashed. But I felt like I ended up being too overexposed to offenses like the Jaguars, you know, even the Jets, because it's like, hey, these guys are getting discounted, and, you know, they have some exciting players, and that's fine, but I then don't want to end up with, like, a portfolio that's like way overweight on
way
offenses
overweight
that could crater.
Crappy guys. Yeah.
Yeah. And underweight on, like, I was really into the Bengals. So, I didn't have enough Packers, though. I didn't have enough Rams. Like, I also want to do the opposite and make a list of like the offenses that I think not that could exceed expectations, but that could crush expectations. That could be, you know, like the top five offenses that you like needed to have that year. I was in on the 49ers. Although that came with Lance, so that didn't help that much. But you know, so I was in on some of those, but just being, I think if you made a list of those, and got like 60, 70% of them right, and were overweight on all of them, you'd have a pretty good year. You know, like a lot of it just comes down to being overweight on the right offenses.
You know, which one really hurt was the Cowboys sucking.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's like the one, that's one of the ones I was in on.
Yeah. And they were just bad. I mean, they had flashes, right? There were a couple of games, like the Buccaneers game. Then that game against the Washington football team. Was that when Washington football team, when they just absolutely smacked, they had like 40 in the first half. Like they clearly showed the ability to
The Atlanta game was the other one.
Yeah. They clearly showed the ability to do it. So I don't think it's one of those things where like the pick was wrong per se, but the pick was wrong because, I mean, obviously the numbers didn't come in, and the thing that we didn't, the thing that we didn't count on was the defense being so good and putting them in a spot where they didn't need to score points. I mean, that was basically what happened. And also, I was definitely team Daigle on just taking Ezekiel Elliott and just being like, look, the numbers are going to be there. And he did have a couple spike weeks, but he was certainly in much more of a timeshare with Tony Pollard than I anticipated.
Yeah. And the other thing with the Cowboys is that I think the pass rate over expected stuff had their passing rates juiced to where, a way above where they ended up coming in, to kind of to your point on the defense, because I think that's a big part of the reason. But they also, like in week two, they went run heavy against the Chargers, which, in retrospect, good on them. Like that's how you beat the Chargers. It's week two. They went super pass heavy against the Buccaneers out of the gate, established that as the way to beat the Buccaneers, or at least to stay competitive with them. And then they go run heavy against the Chargers, against, the league's biggest run funnel all season. So they were playing the matchups, I think, really throughout the year. And yeah, that's a smart way to design an offense, but it's not necessarily going to lead to the best outcomes for us, since we had projected them for massive pass rates. And I also think it's one of the reason that Pollard had a really nice year, because they realized there was
more rushing attempts. Yeah.
Right. So they could kind of lean on the ground in a way that, a lot of other teams couldn't.
And we're going to do this again with Pollard too. Like Pollard's going to be an 8th round pick again this year.
He should. I mean, I'm going to be in on Pollard. Pollard's really good.
Yeah. I mean, that is another thing too, is just drafting more of the handcuff running backs and less of the, I mean, I'll still definitely be in on the Ty Johnson, James White type guys, but definitely going to make more attempt of trying to layer in the pure, the Alexander Madisons, like the AJ Dillons, like the handcuff guys. Cause I mean, those were some of the biggest win rate players this last year, were the guys who just got a couple fill in games.
Yeah. And can actually take over the entire backfield, like Madison. And maybe it won't be the case anymore because like they're not going to have Zimmer, but Madison to be able to just come in and get the entire backfield. And Madison, I think he's good. Like, I think he's an equivalent talent to like a Josh Jacobs or something. He doesn't have the breakaway speed that Cook has, but he's pretty competent across the board. And he's fairly, he does well in like elusive rating. He's like, he's a pretty solid running back, but it is also situation based. It can be hard to predict like which backfields those guys are actually gonna get all the work, or it can change. Like Justin Jackson wasn't that guy, and then all of a sudden he was an absolute smash when they decided that he was actually the guy to play, and Austin Eckler told us he was. But
yeah, and one guy that I got wrong in a spot that we talk about all the time, which is the unsettled backfield, just not enough James Conner, just not even close to enough James Conner. That one hurt a lot.
That was another.
You were on Connor. Yeah, you were.
Yeah, I was on Connor. Yeah,
you tried to help me.
There's some dusty guys that I like gravitate to, and then some dusty guys that I write off completely. And I don't know why I do, which I don't know what it is. But luckily, Connor was one of the dusty guys that I gravitated to as an underpriced guy. But I think, I mean, to me, with Pollard and AJ Dillon, if we're able to get them in the 8th round, which is where they went last year, they're an absolute smash, because we saw that, they're talented, and we saw that both are really more in committees than you know, we thought they would be. They're not just pure handcuffs. I think they're probably going to end up being more like in the sixth round, right? Like there has to be some kind of bump because we're more confident about the talent. You think we're still going to steal them in the eighth?
It's going to be hard to get them into the sixth round when there are still going to be start. Like you can't take Tony Pollard ahead of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, can you?
I mean, you just said you weren't taking him in the seventh and eighth round. So yeah, I think we can.
I mean, I will take Clyde Edwards-Helaire over Tony Pollard next year. I think
this is going to be a fun season.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, fantasy football is particularly in, high stakes and in underdog where the fields are so sharp. I mean, it is just going to get, beyond running back heavy. Like it's going to be insane or wide receiver heavy.
Yeah, it kind of has to, because if we're not getting a new class of running backs, the Cook, Kamara, Henry, like everyone's getting old. Even McCaffrey is entering his age 26 season.
Yeah. We've gone through 45 minutes of this podcast without mentioning Christian McCaffrey. What are we thinking, bud?
I mean, I was just talking with some people on Twitter about this.
Yeah. I just saw you talking about this with Hoppin and Arif, or not Arif. Hassan.
Jacob and Rich. But yeah, I think that he's got to be drafted pretty high just because what was the year where David Johnson, maybe it was 2018 where David Johnson was still like the 105 or something, like after he broke his hand. So not the amazing season in 2016, but then he breaks his wrist or whatever. I think like that year, and obviously he was like a stone cold disaster that year. So
yeah, he had a Zeke season. He was a stone cold disaster, and he finished running back 9.
Right, right.
But he was still a disaster.
Yeah, because that was the Mike McCoy year, and they just decided he was like a fullback, and they didn't throw to him, and they used him as a power back, and it was just disgusting. I do worry about that a little bit with McCaffrey, where, you know, Rule fired Joe Brady because he wants to run more. If they keep him around and he gets to pick the OC, I don't think you're going to be doing really interesting route concepts out of the backfield with McCaffrey like Brady was. So then you start to worry about,
how bad is Matt Rule?
He's so bad. He's so bad.
DJ Moore, there's one that cost me lots of bucks. DJ Moore over Cooper Kupp. I mean, that changes the whole season.
There's like certain players where I'm just going to lose money until they retire. Yep.
And that's DJ Moore is one of them.
I'm just going to keep drafting DJ Moore. Like, you tell me where his ADP is and then I'll be heavily overweight. Because there's no way he's going to be like in the third round or something where I can't pull that off.
No, I think he'll be more in like the fifth round this year.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he could even be like late fifth, early sixth. Like he could be, what was that cluster? Kind of that like Claypool tier this year. I think he could be in that grouping.
Yeah. What about Claypool? What do you do with Claypool?
Who's the quarterback?
Someone better than big, like someone Andy Dalton level.
Oh God. I think I'm still in. he's good.
He's very good. But he is very good. But the offense is not structured in such a way to even want to get him the ball, basically.
Yeah, but that offense is led right now by Ben Roethlisberger, who can't get him the ball all that often. What do you think about Deontay Johnson? Because he's like pretty interesting to me, where he gets open. Like, he is really good at getting open, but he gets open like 3 yards from the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
So it's just like a tough, you know, I it's really tough for me to weigh, because if he gets an Andy Dalton, he'll probably be great. But if he gets like, even if he gets a Jimmy Garoppolo, like, I don't know that Jimmy Garoppolo is doing the Ben Roethlisberger thing where he just throws to him while he's standing still.
Dude, he would smash with Jimmy Garoppolo. Deontay's not that different than Debo.
I mean, Garoppolo gets a lot of his stuff like on crossing routes and things. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but Deontay can do that. They can work the offense around a little bit to do more of that. Yeah.
I think Claypool would be way more exciting on that. Get him full speed over the middle.
Jimmy hits him. No, I mean, he would be, but they also Tomlin hates Chase Claypool. That's an underrated thing.
That's true.
Chase Claypool is a fucking idiot. I don't like Chase Claypool. Like, that's a big
He sat Claypool down in like week 13 last year. It was like, it's time for you to hit the rookie wall, bud.
This year they benched him for a game, for half a game, for James Washington because he wanted to play rap music at practice.
Well, he also pointed first down and everyone got real pissed off about that.
Yeah,
that
people were really mad at him about that. I mean, it's so stupid.
Yeah, I just ignored that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, another underrated thing that happened was we just talked about the Cowboys sucking. I mean, the Chiefs sucked. Mahomes was the first quarterback drafted, and he's going to finish like the quarterback 15.
Yeah, the Chiefs are just overpriced, which, you know, eventually they kind of had to be, you know. But you want to talk about like a team that could be one of those teams that you just needed to have next year. Like the Chiefs, their prices have to come down. You know, I was just talking about how I'm starting to get a little nervous about Kelsey, but you could see Kelsey like still putting in an incredible year, you know, 1 year after everyone thinks he's done. Hill obviously has a huge upside. So, I mean, like, do you think Tyreek Hill's going to go? Tyreek Hill's what? Probably going to go at the 1-2 turn?
Yeah, probably. I mean, he definitely will go after Cooper Kupp, Davante Adams, maybe even Justin Jefferson. I could see
depending him going on the quarterback. After. What about Chase? Does Chase go ahead of him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he will. Especially, I mean, so much of this stuff is going to be influenced by what these guys do in the playoffs. You know, like guys who have really good playoffs are going to get bumped up. Yeah.
But as we sit here today, I think Hill's almost in that like DK Metcalf, Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins tier from this year's draft season.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that,
I mean,
DeAndre Hopkins, that. How about that? Where does DeAndre Hopkins go next year? DeAndre Hopkins, a guy like that we liked who scored touchdowns to like keep himself barely afloat, but he was close to having like a disaster season.
Yeah. Where does he go? I'm trying to think of like a comp for him.
I mean, he was getting out targeted by AJ Green.
Yeah. It wasn't good. So like Julio Jones was going what in like the 4-5.
Yeah.
So he's going to go ahead of that. So yeah, I probably say probably mid third, kind of like where Allen Robinson was going. Maybe. Yeah. Kind of like that McLaurin Robinson tier, maybe a touch after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it probably feels like this every year in fantasy, but like the first couple rounds are like, we've lost a lot of, historically, like these guys have gone in the first couple rounds for many years. Like Allen Robinson, not going to go anywhere close to these rounds. Oh, Hopkins God. Is going to have a big fall. You know, Gibson, right? Gibson, I think, is going to have a decent fall. I think Gibson's helium is going to be replaced by DeAndre Swift. Swift is going to be like 15th overall, probably.
For sure. What about Javonte Williams?
I mean, it just totally depends. If Melvin Gordon leaves to go be a backup tandem with J.K. Dobbins in Baltimore, I mean, Javonte can literally go in the first round.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, on Gibson, assuming he goes kind of like where Miles Sanders did this year, I think I'll, especially in best ball, I'll have some Gibson.
I mean, and that just depends a lot on what they do with McKissick, right? If McKissick gets re-signed or if he doesn't.
Yeah. And at their court, yeah, they need to figure out quarterback. That's been a huge problem.
Yeah, which is, we'll see. I mean, I was never, I was never a Ryan Fitzpatrick guy, but certainly Ryan Fitzpatrick would have been better for him than Taylor Heineke.
Yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick would have been way better. They were doing, Washington, like, I think they kind of quietly are pretty sharp. They Heinicke was one of the highest play action quarterbacks all season. I think he was second behind Tua on the year in play action rate. They run it. They ran a ton of motion. They pass a lot on first and 10. They were using a lot of RPO. They were doing like trick plays, trick play looks. You know, they weren't running a ton of trick plays, but you know, they're just like trying to do all the bells. They were just like anything that might help Taylor Heinicke play efficiently. We're going to do it. We're going to try it. And I don't know, to me, the fact that he was pretty efficient throughout most of the season, excluding absolutely terrible games against Dallas, is impressive. Like, I think their coaching staff's pretty good, you know, Scott Turner being the OC. So if they get anything, if they get like a quarterback upgrade, you know, that's like really anyone that we feel better than like Andy Dalton about, I could see myself talking myself back into Washington, which means where do you think Terry McLaurin will go? Cause I think he would be pretty interesting.
I mean, that again, you know, that totally depends on who their quarterback is. Like if they run back the Taylor Heinicke, Kyle Allen platter of guys, I mean, I just,
yeah, no,
thanks. Wherever he will go, he will be, I won't take him. I just won't be able to justify it. I don't think.
I'm with you on that. Yeah. I can't really see it. I mean, I could see it if he like falls to like the DJ Shark, Marquise Brown, you know, like eighth, ninth round.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's tough.
If Kellen Moore gets hired as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, what are we doing with Jags players?
I don't think we're drafting them. I mean, really? How good is Kellen Moore? I don't know, man. This was bad. This was about as bad a debut as you can get. I don't know. I mean, you know who I would probably draft is ETN.
Yeah, yeah. ETN feels like he's going to be a bargain because, I mean, one of the things is that the people love James Robinson, and so that actually, in a weird way, Cam Akers coming back so soon from this Achilles injury is going to give the James Robinson truthers helium to want to draft James Robinson.
That's a good point. That's a good point. But bro, these Achilles injuries are all over the place.
The offseason is shorter or longer than the regular season. Cam Akers came back, played in the playoffs, dude. There it is. I mean, it's just right there. The slappies are ready for it.
I'm in on ETN, I think. I mean, in this Kellen Moore scenario.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Where are we taking Visca next year? 15th round?
I mean, it's the Visca thing is the same thing as Hardman, where like I've just been burn on him and burn on him and burn on him. Now, next year, they're going to be so cheap. I mean, Visca will
Are you still taking Hardman?
Hardman is going to go in the 18th round next year.
Yeah, he is. Cause you're going to be the only one drafting
and I'm going to be the one taking him. Yeah. But where does Pringle go? Where does Pringle go?
Pringle goes in the 14th, 15th.
Yeah. So
maybe 16th.
A chief in every draft, bud.
But I think Pringle, I mean, they've shown pretty clearly that Pringle's, you know, a guy that they'll start Pringle. Hardman's like a rotational reserve.
I mean, DeMarcus Robinson at least is not going to be on the team next year.
Yeah. Well, so, if DeMarcus Robinson's blocking you from playing time, that's a problem.
No, I mean, obviously he's bad. Yeah. But I just, you know, what can you do? You know?
Yeah. Pringle was a good call, though, man. The chief in every draft.
Dude, Daryl was like amazing. Daryl. Dude, I was very close to having teams that could have made me a lot of money. Like I got enough things super, super right, but it was, and Rojo even having a starting week in the playoffs, like Rojo in the semifinal week, like it was very close to working out. But in the end, the things that I couldn't overcome was the quarterbacks. Honestly, at the end of the day, that was actually the thing. I mean, one of the teams I had in the semifinal had no quarterback. I had Justin Fields missed and Sam Darnold didn't play. So I just had zero quarter and Lamar also as well.
Yeah. And the thing that, and I had a lot of teams like that too. And the thing that really bumps me out about it is like, what if I had been right? Like, what if Fields
just wasn't on the COVID list?
What if I had been right versus what if I had taken more, I don't know who's like the boring quarterback that going in that range. What if I just had like a lot more Kirk Cousins? Yeah.
I mean, honestly, Pat, we've gone this far in the podcast without saying the thing that we really missed, which was Leonard Fournette. I mean, Leonard Fournette, just was a smash. Fit all of the things that we should like. He catches passes, ambiguous backfield, good offense, and we're sitting with our thumbs up our asses drafting Giovanni Bernard.
Dude, the Giovanni Bernard thing, it makes me so mad at myself because I just used it as an excuse. Obviously have a bias against Fournette because we faded him in 2020, worked out great. And you know, I'm rooting for Rojo, so then come in. But in the early offseason, I notified the entire ship chasing channel to be like, don't not draft Leonard Fournette because of my bias, because he's like totally fine where he's going. Rojo's going to drop an ADP, which he did, of course. But the Geo pick kind of got me out of that headspace. Cause I was thinking early in the offseason, like, okay, Fournette's fine. Like I'll begrudgingly take him some because, you know, the pass catching role, et cetera. He looked good in the playoffs or it didn't look terrible. And then like, I just, as soon as I had a reason to stop thinking sharply, I took it. And that excuse was Gio, which was a terrible excuse because Gio was terrible the year before, you know? And like the excitement around Gio catching passes, it's so easy, you know, in retrospect, but obviously at the time, you know, someone was like, hey, do you think maybe Gio might suck? And then who else can catch passes on the roster besides Gio? It's not Rojo, right? Right. Like, you know, you could have got, who is it? Oh, it's Fournette. Yeah. So that was a frustrating one for sure.
I mean, it's just very obnoxious.
Yeah.
And what a change to the season. I mean, even if you just hit on what, if you hit on Connor, if you hit on Fournette on, you know, 20% of your teams or whatever, I mean, it just, your advance rates are just so big. I mean, your advance rates are just so big.
The other thing is that I want to like, you know, in terms, because these biases, right, they really affect, and you try to prevent them from affecting you. But I kind of want to try to like flip the biases in my favor a little bit. Like, so for example, with Fournette, we fade Fournette in 2020, works out great. So then like your kind of lizard brain bias wants to like do it again. But
yeah,
the way better payoff emotionally is to not fade him, get on him, and then he hits, and then you faded him when he sucked, and you hammered him when he hit, and you feel like an absolute genius. That was on the table. Could have tried that out. So I kind of want to like think about like how, you know, my silly emotions will feel later and try to like trick my biases that way. What do you think about that?
No, I like it, but what you're describing is really just being price sensitive in a way that you and I are both bad at. Because you and I just get so excited about players. Like we're like, this guy's amazing or this guy sucks. Like we just get so all in or so all out on players. Whereas guys who are really, really good at daily fantasy, guys who are really, really good at season long fantasy, they just tend to be they just are very price sensitive. So like LaVisca as a rookie in like the 14th round, all in. LaVisca as a semi-impressive rookie playing with a rookie quarterback and a shitty head coach in the sixth round, not nearly as interesting to those players.
But what about in the fifth round?
Right. But we were just like, why not? Like, oh, he's a LaVisca Chenault. We're all in. Like, let's do it. It's really sad. What would you pay for LaVisca right now in a seasonal draft or in a dynasty league? Our dynasty super flex league.
I'd give a third for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the saddest sentence that's ever been stated on this show.
I mean, Superflex thirds have some value.
A third for LaVisca is a sad state of the world.
I wouldn't give a second. Would you give a second to Superflex? I mean, those are pretty valuable picks.
If I had multiples, if I had like 3 seconds.
Yeah, that's fair. It's pretty weak draft class from what I hear too. So maybe it would be smart to give a second.
I actually think it's a good... wide receiver class, though. I think we're going to end up getting enamored by the wide receivers.
Ooh, I do like getting enamored by wide receivers.
Like Treylon Burks. He's like he unbelievable. Good. Yeah.
He looks awesome.
And the Ohio State guys, I mean, you never know what to do with the Ohio State guys, but these, like, Olave is going to run like a 4.3.
Yeah. I'm done questioning Ohio State guys. They always overperform. Overperform relative to their advanced metrics and stuff. To the price sensitive thing, and the Fournette point on price sensitivity is great because, like, we faded him when he was a fourth round pick. Then he was like a ninth round pick. Obviously, you know,
dude, he went way later than the ninth round. He was going after like Kenyon Drake.
Well, in FFPC, he was more in the ninth, but I think he was. Yeah. But you're right. In best ball, he's a little bit later. But like when I was talking earlier about the prior thing, you know, like trying to set up like, you know, better priors on guys like Swift and Gibson and stuff, like it really does just come down to price sensitivity and just like kind of, I think in some ways, like trying to cap, say like this guy, you know, relative to projections, you know, this guy is kind of someone that I would like to boost most likely because of like, he has this really great profile, you know, let's say he's a second year player, a third year player. And, you know, he's been really efficient and kind of relative to what will make sense to project him. I'm going to be excited, but I kind of want to figure out like where the caps are on that. You know, like he has the profile of a guy who like, if he was projected for an awesome workload would be a great pick in the, you know, third round. But then when, you know, he gets pushed up into the mid second, early second, it's okay not to be drafting him so much. And I also want to be doing more drafts early in the off season, which I'm hoping will prevent me from chasing guys up so much because I'll already feel like I have plenty of exposure.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much whenever the problem is that Best Ball Mania will launch way before they start doing the puppies. Well, maybe they won't. I mean, I have this grand dream that they launch a puppy with $1 million in first place and they just make it absolutely massive. And it just, you know, it just goes all off season. Like that would be incredible. I don't know if they will. But I mean, just having to, like, there's a, like, $5 drafts, you can just do an infinite number. I mean, you could just do whatever, but just like it just, to do the $25 drafts every single day, it gets pricey, especially when you just take Ronald Jones and Mecole Hardman and all of them. It gets really pricey that way.
It sure does. What are you doing with Derrick Henry next year?
I'm done fading Derrick Henry. I'll take him the same way I take Cook or Kamara or whoever. Like if the market decides he's the fifth pick, and I will take him when I get the fifth pick.
Come on, man. He's almost retired. We can't stop fading now.
No. This is Leonard Fournette part dose. This is we're doing.
No, it's not, because he's not cheap. If Derrick Henry was in the 11th round, sure, but he's going to be what, the 105.
Yeah. He. I mean, maybe more. Depends if he comes back and owns in the playoffs.
Yeah. Turns 29 in January.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does.
Does he really?
No, shit. No, I'm sorry. He already turned 28 a couple days ago.
Is that true?
Yeah,
okay, never mind. I lied.
Added a year to him.
I lied. Yeah, I lied. We got to do it. We got to fade Derrick Henry again.
All right. Let's fade him. What's the point of even playing fantasy if we can't fade Derrick Henry in his 35 touches a game?
Yeah, like if we can't clearly fade, you know, the guy who was on pace to be the best fantasy football draft pick ever, then yeah,
just an absolute smash. Just a total smash.
I mean, yeah. He literally was on pace, we got bailed out. We really got bailed out by him getting hurt. Yeah.
100%. But at the same time, he wasn't actually like, you know, the advanced metrics on, you know, breakaway, rush yards over expected. He's normally crushed those. He didn't. New offensive coordinator didn't seem quite as creative. And, you know, you see that with the play action rate for Tannehill being way down. Like he's just a little bit kind of more, it's just like a simpler scheme, it seems like. And part of that is just like, let's just hand the ball to Henry a million times. that's not great for injury rate, right? Like it, coming off the foot injury now.
Yeah, but you can't even sweat that with Henry. When you're taking Derrick Henry, you're just drafting the Terminator.
Yeah, but I think we feel that way about guys until we don't. And then it flips like super quickly and we're like, no, he's injury prone. I mean, he's like what, 250 pounds, 240, whatever he is. And, you know, his foot, he injured his foot, you know, the lower body stuff. I can't sell you on this at all.
Yeah, but dude, he's going to come back. He's going to come back in the playoffs and just absolutely own.
Yeah, he is.
Like he's going to, I don't even know who they're set to play in the first round, but they're going to play someone in the first round and he's going to have like 180 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns. And we're going to be like, oh yeah, there's that guy that we're planning on going into the season, not drafting again.
Yep. That's exactly right. And then
now I will be comfortable fading Ezekiel Elliott this year. Like wherever, I don't know. He'll get pushed up a little bit because of the guaranteed volume, you know.
Yeah, but I don't think he'll go anywhere near Henry.
Where do you think he goes?
I don't know. I think he goes like not quite 2-3 turn, but more like maybe the 208-210.
I could probably be talked into it then. Because it feels like
where he almost has to go.
Well, it feels like if the Cowboys defense has, you know, if the Cowboys defense is much worse, and Dak will have this offseason to get healthy from like whatever is ailing him. It feels like a lot of things are ailing him.
Yeah, I won't be on it. Because that's a range where there's always really good wide receiver picks.
There is always really good wide receiver. I mean, where's CeeDee Lamb go next year?
Probably pretty similar range.
Doesn't that feel bad? Considering that he basically was completely, he crushed against Atlanta and he had a really good week one. And that was kind of all he did.
He's been really efficient this year. Michael Gallup, obviously not going to be there.
1,000 yards and 6 touchdowns is what you got with CeeDee Lamb this year.
Yeah, I'm still in.
I mean, obviously I'm still in.
What, early third? Like,
yeah, same range. He just went in.
Yeah. What about T. Higgins? Where do you think he goes?
T feels like a screaming buy because it feels like drafters won't want to have him and Chase both so high, where Chase probably goes tail end of the first round. So it feels like T will probably go after like Lamb. And feels like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
I would take T in the late second.
Yeah. I mean, if you want T. Higgins, there the recurring bit that you guys were never able to get T this year on ship chasing, I don't think that's going to be a thing. I think you're going to be able to draft lots of T. Higgins.
Sweet.
We should try to not come in last place in our league this year in the main event.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
You know what's absurd is that team was actually so good. Like that team, we got Eli Mitchell, we got Chase Edmonds, who was like a playoff hero. Like that team actually, like we got all these things right, but
we got all the running backs. We didn't have any wide receivers.
We made all the wrong start sets at the beginning of the season.
Yeah,
like every wrong start set.
Well, we'll draft Henry next year, and we'll be good.
Yeah, there you go. All right, man. Let's get you out of here. Tell the people what they can. What are you going to be working on over on the off season on NBC Sports Edge?
Well, through the playoffs, I'm still doing the walkthrough. So yeah, check that out. I'll be doing kind of the same, just less games, but you know, the same kind of deep dive approach. Helpful for DFS and everything. And still doing ship chasing every Wednesday night, 9:15. This next week, we're doing like a full like blowout FFPC playoff contest. We're doing 5 shows next week.
Wow. They're
going to be joining us on Tuesday. We got Daigle on Monday. We got Hassan and Blair on Wednesday. We're doing Sean Siegel. It's coming on Thursday. Then we're doing a drunk show with Leone and Dink on Friday night. So it's just the whole week. We're talking FFPC playoff contest. We're going to be talking ownership projections on Tuesday with you. It'll be a lot of fun. I love that contest.
Yeah. I mean, it is a very fun contest. I don't think I've ever done well in it, to be honest. Like, I feel like
it's like last year we had we were like pretty live a couple rounds in, and then things kind of broke against us. The Chubb having really strong games hurt us pretty badly, because that was a big pivot spot where we went to Landry there. But it's a fun thing because you have to think through, like, not just who's going to win each round, but like, because you pick one player from every team. You can only pick one player from each team, and everyone's limited by the same constraints and no salaries or anything. So, you know, there's kind of like guys who get super chalky, you want to pivot off them, but then you also have to think like, well, if this team advances, you know, are they actually going to advance because of Jarvis Landry or because of Nick Chubb? And most of the time it's because of Nick Chubb.
Yeah. Well, not great. Not great to get. I guess it's fitting to be owned by Nick Chubb one last time.
Nick Chubb, by the way, is a guy I think I'm going to be in on next year. Not the typical profile, but I'm kind of excited about Nick Chubb.
Well, when Kirk Cousins is their quarterback.
Let's go. Let's go. I mean, showed up, flashed as a receiver, looks great on those screen passes.
Is Kareem Hunt's contract still a thing?
I think it might be. I think he might be still there, but I don't know. I could see them just like treating him more like Dalvin Cook next year. And you still have the other thing with Chubb that you have is he's just like truly still an elite rusher. He's just,
oh, for sure. You know,
and I think like in a way that I'm starting to waver a little bit on Henry, just because now we've got age and he didn't flash it quite as much this year. Chubb, there's just no doubts that he's
just like, really looking forward to getting buried by 28-year-old Derrick Henry. That's gonna be that's gonna be really special.
It's gonna be the best.
Yeah. All right, everyone, follow Pat, listen to the Good Football Show, read NBC Sports Edge. We'll be back next week.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.